Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello everybody, welcome to The Call as we kick off the afternoon here on AusBiz Australia's only live streaming business and markets channel. Great to have your company and great to be back in the chair here at The Call for 2022. And got a great show ahead and kicking off with my favourite panel, Gaurav Sodhi from Intelligent Investor, Maithan Somasundaran from Deep Data Analytics. Good morning. Afternoon, gents. Welcome to 2022, although you guys have been sort of back at it for a little while at the moment. Maithan, you've been prolific on Twitter.
There's nothing else to do when you're stuck at home. Other than running into supermarkets trying to get stuff when, you know, there's supply chain issues everywhere.
Yeah. Follow Maithan on Twitter. He's very informative, entertaining, and Gaurav, he's become a lot more opinionated at a whole range of things.
I'm glad to see it. You know, one thing I've been, you know, we've known each other for a long time, and I've been waiting for this transformation to happen. I'm glad to see it, mate. About time. No more pen sitting.
So that's been very good. All right, we always run out of time with you two because there's a lot of information that you share with us. So let's get stuck into it. Stock of the day is not Wesfarmers because it's one of the suggested stocks a bit later on. They, of course, had their trading update today. So we'll go into that in a bit more detail a bit later in the program. But our stock of the day, Clinuvel Pharmaceuticals, shares up pretty strongly in trading this morning after announcing its completed enrollment in its study of one of their treatments for one of their stroke medications. And always pharmaceuticals and these med techs are fascinating, and particularly when they make progression in developing a particular drug. Maithan, what did you think of the announcement today and also the stock as it is?
Yeah, look, it's an interesting time in the cycle for biotechs. 2021 was a great year for most biotechs. I mean, in Australia, we have a lot of small biotechs, and then we got CSL with the behemoth that does everything. So if you don't know anything, you just buy CSL, and CSL is a market darling. Now, Clinuvel, it's actually got a lot of ponies. I mean, I'm a big fan of biotechs. They'll give me the same risk return as mining stocks. Blue sky upside, a lot of risk while they're doing it, and you have to know management, you have to trust management, because at the end of the day, this is about the blue sky treatment that they have to go through these processes, regulatory play, prove it, and the concept has to work. But the trick with biotech is you want to have a basket of stocks because you just don't know which one's going to do well and de-risk your investment. Now, the good thing about someone like Clinuvel is they've got multiple ponies running. So they're different, solutions that they're working on. And all you need is one or two to come through and you've made their jackpot. So in that context, I think it stacks up relatively well. The only problem I've got is it's just the macro where we are in the market. So classic growth stock. So the market at the moment wants to buy value stocks, cyclical growth stocks, not your classic growth stocks. So the biotechs and the tech stocks that did really well, the healthcare stocks that did really well through last year, will have a tougher run at this point. Mm. But in saying that, Clinuvel's, you know, it's one of those things. There's a tale of two cities. There's one part of the growth stocks that have already been hammered, and the other part of the growth stocks haven't been hammered. So Clinuvel is in the one that's come back. I mean, if you look at the last probably 12 to 18 months chart, very similar trend to what's happening with CSL. So it's a more of a macro trade on what's happening. So they have a decent pipeline, a lot of products in play. So I do like it, but I think in the shorter term, macro takes over. So it might be weak in the shorter term. And if you're a fan, I would say buy a bit at a time over the next 3 to 4 months. And I think it's worthwhile taking a punt on as a biotech.
Okay. All right. And if you're in it, certainly hold it by the sound of it.
Yeah.
Gaurav?
Yeah, I know this is one of Nathan's favorite sectors, so I was interested to get his take on it. This is a stock we've actually followed and recommended for a number of years, in fact. And it's not our natural hunting ground. We've actually got some specialist interest in this area. Our science kind of analyst has a lot of qualifications in this area, and he's got a natural interest in this area. So he does come up with weird and wonderful companies for us to look at from time to time. This is one of them. So Clinuvel has a chemical compound that deals with skin pigmentation. And it's used this single compound to launch a whole series of treatments for really rare and small-scale diseases. So the one that we're most interested in, they've got a treatment for vitiligo, which is a rare skin condition that discolors parts of the skin. It's a absolutely devastating disease if you get it, and the treatment options are quite few. They have one of the most promising treatments on the market. And running the numbers through the potential revenue and profit on that treatment, it is a company maker if it pans out. And so far, the signs are actually quite good. And then the icing on the cake really is that they can use that compound to then build other treatments, which they are currently doing. And the one we're talking about today, the one they announced about today, is a smaller, I would say, less significant part of the optionality. But it does demonstrate what's possible here. You can take something that works and make some incremental changes to it to create new treatments, and that's the opportunity available here. They've got a revenue stream. They do have cash flow to draw upon. It's a good management team that are focused on solving very specific problems. I think that's key when you're delving into this area. You want a business that knows exactly what it's doing, unlike say Mesoblast, which just tries to do just scattergun approach and trying to find a hit out of nowhere. These guys are very focused on what they're doing, and I quite like the business. We've had a buy on it for about 2 years, actually, and I think that's with the recent price correction, I think that remains the call now. So I'll go spec buy on this one as well.
Okay.
Absolutely fascinating to keep an eye on.
All right. Okay. Some good ones there. All right. Let's get into the stocks that you've suggested we have a look at. And Gaurav Gabriel wants a view on Calix. Gabriel says, I've averaged up since it was suggested and want to be a long-term holder. But how will the experts navigate 2022 with rising interest rates? Calix is sort of a new technology making, if you like, green steel, isn't it? And capturing the carbon.
Well, this is going to be, I think, one of the difficult questions of this year is how do you treat these kind of businesses? Calix has no doubt a promising technology, a genuine, important innovation that can solve a whole heap of problems. It's a $1 billion market cap with very little revenue, zero profits. And, what do you do with it in this kind of environment where interest rates are rising, narrative stocks, theme stocks are on the nose, and they should be with what's going on around the world? I don't have a concrete answer to that. But looking through the business, I've been following for a little while. What they have is that they have a new innovation that that basically creates a new kiln technology, so a way of heating stuff that's greener, more efficient, and completely different to existing technologies. And you can apply this in various different circumstances. Now, when Calix first listed, the promise was that this is going to be a green way of making concrete. And that was a really important problem because concrete is one of the largest greenhouse gas emission processes we have on the planet. And so doing that more efficiently goes a long way towards reducing carbon emissions. The story has completely changed now. You go through their presentation now, it's all about new battery materials, not a single mention of concrete. And it's all about where they've got an agreement with Pilbara Minerals. We're all about lithium and new battery materials. And that concerns me a little bit.
Right.
You've got a great core technology that appears to be working. I don't fully understand the technicals of it, but we haven't done a deep dive on this business. But it's a promising core technology. but the narrative has done a dramatic flip from concrete to batteries, and that worries me because it suggests that management's sort of chasing the newest fad, and that's not really the sort of people you want to be invested alongside.
Right.
Now, that doesn't make this a sell automatically. I just think this is one to follow from a distance for the moment. It is interesting. I am watching it. I wouldn't be buying it today, but I think there's enough here to possibly hold. It depends on your risk profile. I think it's fine as a hold, but I would certainly not be buying. And if anything, I'd probably just watch my position size, make sure it's a nice small holding. But yeah, keep an eye on it. It could be a great success in the future, or it could fizzle out to nothing if it's not handled properly. Yeah. So the classic definition of speculative.
Yeah, really good point. Nathan, what do you think of Calix?
Yeah, I thought, you know, start the year, I could start having arguments with Gaurav, but unfortunately,
he's
pretty much on the ball here. It's an interesting thematic, but I think Gaurav hit the nail on the head when he says, when the thematic of what the management is selling changes with the hottest thematic of the moment, you start to, you know, red lights start to, you know, go off in my head. Why is management changing? And I mean, it makes sense. I mean, if you... Even Blind Freddy would have jumped on a battery thematic if you can. And they kind of evolved through that play, and they're on the conferences, and the stock's done well. I mean, it's a $1 billion stock. So it's not like you're finding something new. Now, the trick here is, as Gaurav said, you have a stock that can play into multiple thematics. So it's one of those technologies that if it works out to actually come up with a solution, then that could be translated into multiple different industries. And that could be the growth story for a long time. So you don't want to say, well, that's it. Now, on the flip side of that, it's on a massive multiple because it is what it is, right? It's a concept that it can play into. So it's a concept that the market knows about. Now, the trick here is when did you get in? If you're looking at it with fresh eyes and you're trying to jump in, I'd be a bit careful. This is not the time to buy these kind of stocks where there is a good story, but still yet to be played out. So that risk return for a $1 billion market cap is always a tricky one. But if you got in early and you've had the run up, then as Gaurav said, it just makes sense to take some money off the table, de-risk your investment, and then see how it goes. When you look at where things can go, you know, the previous low was around 575 odd. So if you start to see this stock falling below that level, then the sentiment is turned quite negative. So people are now saying, okay, I'm going to wait and see how this plays out before I jump in. If that happens, I'll be reducing. But at the moment, I'll probably be reducing gradually to de-risk it. If it falls below 575, I'll get out and see what happens.
Okay, so you're taking some profits. If
you've think you just got to be in this kind of market where we are. You just got to manage risk.
Yep, all right. Thank you for that suggestion, Gabriel. Some really good analysis there. Now, Simeon wants a view on mineral resources. Simeon says, Gaurav always speaks highly of mineral resources. Keen to get his view on when to take profits as it approaches its 52-week high as well. Of course, it's the miner that's in iron ore, it's in lithium, it's got a chief executive, which Gaurav and Maitham both speak very highly of. Gaurav, what do you reckon of mineral resources at the moment? Would you be taking some money off the table?
Yeah, mineral resources. Now, we're not supposed to do this. We're not supposed to fall in love with businesses and have an affection for them and really like them too much. But I love this business. I almost have fallen in love with it and have a lot of affection for it. And it's not because it's made me a ton of money. It has nothing to do with it. I really like how this business has from day one done something completely different to all of its competitors. It's done its own thing. It started life as a crushing contractor, and it used to contract for really low quality operations. They couldn't justify their own contracting crushing expenses. So it set up a crushing business, and it got so good at crushing that it actually crushes for everyone in the industry now, including the big boys. So it's gone from being servicing low quality, high cost mines to servicing everyone, and it is by far the market leader. That crushing business, I still think to this day, is chronically misunderstood by the market. When I see brokers talk about it, they give it sort of a 5 or 6 times multiple. They compare it to mining services businesses, but But this is almost an infrastructure business. You know, they're just taking a clip on every ton of iron ore production that runs through the country. And you cannot run an iron ore operation without crushing. Crushing is one of the most vital components, and they own the game because they've got a bank of designs that they can change to sort of suit any environment. And all these designs have to be bespoke. But more importantly, a bit like Reese and Babcor, they've actually established a supply distribution network in the middle of nowhere to replace parts, to service plants, so they have the lowest downtime. And that is just impossible to replicate. So this is a impregnable core business, which I think is completely misunderstood by the market. And I think my valuation on it is more than double the next highest valuation in the market on that crushing business. And I think there's still a lot of potential there. Now, beyond that, you've got an iron ore business, iron ore mining operation that is so far pretty poor quality, but they're investing a lot of money into making that a much better quality operation. And I don't think the market understands that either. This is going to be a large and better quality iron ore miner over the next 5 or 6 years. And they're putting the plans and the dollars in place to make that happen. The lithium side of the business, I think, is starting to be reflected in the share price. And that's probably the part I understand least well. And I'm not all that up to date with lithium economics, but I do like that they are producing processed hydroxide and not just digging up spodumene rocks, which I think is a terrible business. By doing the processing and the hydroxide, every ton of lithium they dig up, they get 10 times the revenue compared to just selling the raw rock. And so, as usual, Chris Ellison, the founder and CEO, is right on how to maximize every dollar of profit. There's no other company that combines annuity-style servicing revenue with production, with new ventures, as well as MinRes does. It has really high returns on capital. I think this is an outstanding company, but there are some problems on the horizon. I think they're having cost and staff issues. The share price is not overly dear, but I think in the short term you might see some potential fall. So I would hold from here. We've had a buy on it for I've been buying for a long time. I finally convinced my colleagues, and we've added a little bit to our portfolios. I think if you can get it under $50, I think it's an absolute must own. But it's a hold for me, and I think the risks are a little bit higher than they ordinarily are at the moment because of cost pressures.
So Simeon is saying, should he take some profits off the top?
If you're a long-term holder, I haven't sold a single share and I don't plan to sell any.
Right.
But I am prepared for the share price to fall. And if that happens, I'm happy to top up. I think that's the attitude we should approach this. Trying to pick the ups and downs is just a very difficult game. And I wouldn't be trying to do it. So hold. Okay. And as it falls, buy some more.
Okay. Nathan Gaurav says he has an affection for Mineral Resources. Sounds more like an affair to me, but I'll let you be the judge. do you have the same sort of love and passion for Mineral Resources?
Gaurav has an indecent proposal for Mineral. unfortunately, Gaurav loves it, and he loves it more than he should. But look, Mineral, Ellison is, he's an acquired taste. Some people like Gaurav love him. There's a lot of people that don't. But Gaurav's right. He doesn't do things like what other people do it. He goes for different things. He looks at things and puts his hand into it and then works out what pieces need to be done, tries to do all parts of that piece, and tries to get every margin that he can squeeze out of everyone. So he's good at what he does. I'm not trying to pick whether I like the guy or not, but he delivers, he executes, he's very good at what he does. So that's all you care about. Now, the interesting part about MinRes is you have to remember the size and where it sits. So it's actually outside the 100, so it's a small cap. So if you wanted to play a scale miner that gives you a diversified business model, there isn't too many players that you can go into. So MinRes, especially an iron ore play, becomes the dominant play. So that's And it has a sensitivity, I think, from memory, it's about 10% of its earnings. So it's a highly leveraged play. So yes, they're good. Do I like management? I don't care about management, but they execute. He executes. He's got a track record of executing. That's all I care about. So in that context, you've got to trust management here, let them do their thing. the recent run-up is more to do with what's happening in lithium, as Gaurav said. Yeah, I'm a bit worried about the whole lithium thing. Everything is a billion-dollar asset, multi-billion-dollar assets now. Look, battery technology is the future. Is lithium batteries going to be the only solution? I doubt that. There'll be a basket of solutions. So all of these things will, you know, as with anything, gets excited and then settles down. MinRes, I think you got to remember, don't fall in love like Gaurav. It's a cyclical stock. It's a mining stock. It's dominated by what happens in China. Now, if you look at the property prices in China, they're not crash hot. Chinese are trying to go through massive reform while they're going through the deleveraging cycle through reform. And they are trying to deflate the asset bubbles. So while that happens, we're just not sure that all the iron ore stocks have actually rebounded more than the iron ore itself, because everyone's assuming China is going to suddenly pump stimulus and go back to building roads to nowhere and plenty of ghost cities. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's a different cycle now. They are trying to manage things. They can see the risk. They can see the mistakes the West is making, and China's trying not to make it. Mind you, they've already got a massive bubble to deal with.
Yep.
So in the short term, I think there's a risk to it. I would be taking profit here and come back later. Because if you look at both sides, I think iron ore has a substantial risk to what's happening in China. Lithium, I think it's too much, especially played out at the moment. I think people's expectations are too high. So I think there's definite risk there. So in the short term, I'd take profit and come back. But in the longer term, as Gaurav said, if the stock pulls back anywhere in the 40 or 50, you buy some. You buy some gradually over time, because the guy will do well in the long run.
Okay. All right. There you go. That's really good advice that you received there, Simeon. Answers your question. Nathan, Dominic wants a view on Monash IVF, the IVF fertility specialist, also into a lot of imaging services as well.
Yeah, look, we were looking at this and Virtus VRT, because, you know, about things about 12 months ago, they were unloved. They were massive cash generating businesses. They're good, you know, these are not exciting businesses, but they churn out pretty good cash, undervalued, and we knew at some point this will come through. And that did happen, and I think Virtus VRT got a bid, and I think that's pushed it up as well, and the market is now starting to understand the risk return that it provides, and the stocks have done well. Do I think it's a hidden gem at the moment? I don't think so. I think the market's pricing it what it should be. I think it's okay. If you've been there, I think you can hold. I don't think there's anything wrong with the business. But if I'm jumping in to buy a healthcare growth stock, those are under pressure. Monash is probably not one of them, but because of the healthcare play, it'll probably see a bit of selling. So I'd be a bit careful right now. So I wouldn't jump in right now into Monash. But look, I think it's a good business, solid business. I think it does well.
Okay. Gaurav? Gaurav may have just
lost.
Have we lost Gaurav? Ah, yeah, Gaurav.
Sorry, I just jumped back on.
Monash IVF.
I missed most of what Nathan said, but I will. The way I fall in love with MinRes, I've had kind of an opposite relationship with the IVF providers. We've had a pretty disastrous relationship with Virtus and Monash. We've recommended these for years and just lost money on them, and made errors all along the way, analytical errors, behavioral errors. Yeah. But the core of it is that we just thought that these were better quality businesses than they really were. And you can see why that will be the case, right? Because we all know the thematics at play here. Women are having babies or children at a later age. The demand for these sort of services are only going to increase. And I would have thought that the demand would be non-discretionary. You'd have lots of pricing power. You know, if someone is willing to pay $10,000 for a cycle, they're probably willing to pay $15,000 or $18,000 for that same cycle. And so I thought there'd be lots of pricing power. And so, you know, we actually have bought both of these. And as I said, I think most of our assumptions about the industry were incorrect, and we've been wrong on these. They're actually not great businesses. First of all, the demand is highly discretionary. People are very sensitive to price. There's a lot of competition, and the competition is based on price as well. And the power of the individual doctors in these companies is actually quite strong. So Monash had one particular doctor who was responsible for about 30% of all procedures. And once she left and set up her own practice, all her clients went with her, and the business has never recovered from that loss. And I wonder how much of those, of that kind of hidden risk lies in these companies.
Yep.
But the probabilities of success are variable and unknowable, and these just aren't great quality companies. I mean, they're okay. Steady. You can see from the results, they provide steady cash flow, steady returns. Growth is hard to come by and often gets competed away. And I think the appropriate multiple is sort of sub 20 times, which is what the market is pricing at the moment.
All right.
And I think that there's no real opportunity here. What you're seeing is the market finally being rational and judging these companies on the way they really are. So I would say we've been wrong over the last few years. The market's probably right. I don't think there's an opportunity here. If I held it, I'd sell it and look at something else. I don't think these are interesting.
All right. Eamon wants a view. Gaurav, we need to sort of pick up the pace a bit on News Corporation, okay. The giant media group that owns everything from newspapers to subscription television. And if you're a fan of Succession, the series, apparently it's based on the Murdochs. So that's intrigued a lot of people. Gaurav, what do you think of views?
Yeah, I just finished watching Succession, actually, and I was absolutely fascinated. And I couldn't stop thinking about News Corp in this same context as well. And I wonder if that's the way deals get done here, too.
Yeah.
look, we've owned this in the past and have sold it last year at some point, done okay from it. It's a hodgepodge of businesses. They're actually firing really well together. 85% of revenues come from REA at realtor.com, which is kind of the American equivalent, which is absolutely firing at the moment. But what really surprised me was how well the other divisions are doing. So books, there is a renaissance in book publishing, and this is actually a profitable little business. It makes $300 million a year from publishing books. And I think that's probably stable and sustainable. The Dow Jones is a good business. Even the crappy parts of the business, or the Fox and the cable businesses, are actually doing okay. So look, on the sum of the parts, this still looks cheap. But I would caution that it needs to be cheap, because it's hard to know how you're going to extract value from this company without kind of breaking it all apart. And there's very little inclination to do that. So look, I think full value has been realized. It was cheap for a long time. It's cheap no longer. I will sell this and move on. Keep an eye on it. If there are talks about breakups or divestments, that might be another opportunity.
Okay. Nathan, News Corp?
Yeah, Grav's always loved this one. I remember the days when he used to say, if you want to get exposure to realestate.com, buy News Corp. And it's true. Their valuation is dominated by real estate. And if you look at the last couple of years, the share price pretty much trades almost the same chart as realestate.com, because the valuation is dominated by that. We like the media sector. The market will soon move from high growth to cyclical growth stocks. Media sector plays quite well with that, because all the risk in hospitality, travel, and all of that, and retail. When you want customers coming back, you need to advertise, and the media sector will benefit out of that. So we're seeing quite a good recovery cycle in the media sector. And you've got election coming. No one spends money. Well, no one spends other people's money like government. So there's an election cycle coming, so the media sector will do even better, and midterms coming in the US as well. So in that context, I think the media sector looks good. We like a number of media stocks. We like the beaten up ones. So we've been fans of O Media and Southern Cross Media. I think both of them look good, and they'll come up. News Corp for me is priced well. I think they're good. They've got good pieces. Most of the pieces are doing well, cyclical recovery. But I don't think the market is pricing it badly. Market knows. I don't think there's a lot of upside. I think Gaurav's right. This is where you take your money and go somewhere else.
Okay. All right. But you like Southern Cross and O Media. Nathan, Sol wants a view on the VanEck MSCI International Quality ETF. Sol says, what do you think of it as a core holding to a portfolio?
Yeah, look, I don't mind it. I think it's a good ETF. Now, the question is, what are you investing in? What's your thematic? Now, if you're thinking like a multi-asset ETF play and this is part of that, sure, makes sense. I think the thing that you have to remember is the weighting. When you have a multi-asset ETF using multi-asset play with ETFs, you need to look at the weightings of it. So you might, at this point in the cycle, I would be reducing your weighting. So we've reduced it a while ago, international shares, and I would be doing that in this one if you're doing it for that aspect, simply because US market is holding up global markets. So, and US market, if you take out the half a dozen stocks, it's actually underperforming. So it's mainly held up by a few stocks. Now, if you look at their holdings, guess what? They're dominated by US stocks and those handful of stocks. So if the market does come back to, you know, as with rates rising, tapering, there will be normalization in the US market. That'll lead to global normalization. Multiples will come off. These handful of stocks will eventually come to lower multiples. So you'll see some weakness. So in that context, on an asset allocation basis, I think you need to downweight your international shares. So if you're using this as part of your asset allocation on an overall portfolio, downweight it. I would still hold it, but I would have less of it. That's the theory for me.
Okay. Gaurav?
No, I don't like this. ETFs work when they're very broad-based. And if you're mirroring an index with an ETF, I think that's excellent. That's exactly what they're used for, and that's when they're at their best. When they don't work is when you're trying to use the ETF as a stock proxy. So, you know, if you want some esoteric, crazy narrative theme, very specific, and you choose an ETF, I think that's the inappropriate use of ETFs. Just a personal view. You know, you're better off doing a stock-specific selection if that's the case. I mean, you're picking things anyway. You've made a conscious choice to pick a sector or pick a theme. Why not do a little bit more work and pick a stock if you're going to do all that? Right. If you're not interested and just want a very broad exposure to equities, ETFs are the way to go. I think this is a terrible way to select stocks. There's three filters in this ETF: high ROE, earning stability, and financial leverage. Now, like peace, freedom, and joy, they all sound like wonderful things, but they mean different things to different people. Yeah. And I just think you want, as an investor, you want maximum flexibility, and you don't want to be tied down to numbers as ropey as ROE. I mean, we can spend a whole hour on ROE. It is a ropey number. So this is a sell for me. I think this is a terrible way to invest, and I would never own it.
Okay. All right. Let's recap the first five stocks. Stock of the day, Clinuvel Pharmaceuticals, a buy from Gaurav, and a hold and accumulate from, if you want to get into it, bits and pieces for from Mathan. Calix, a hold from Gaurav. Take some profits from Mathan. Mineral Resources, a hold from Gaurav. Take some profits from Mathan. If it gets down to that $40-$50 mark, then look at getting back in. Both of them agree there could be a pullback in the MinRes share price in the not too distant future. Monash IVF, a no from Mathan, a sell from Gaurav. News Corp, a sell from both of them, and VanEck ETF, a sell from Gaurav, a hold from Mathan. Let's go on to our sixth stock. In this second half of the call, we're looking at Novati, NIB Holdings, Booktopia, Wesfarmers, and Global Data Center Group. So that's coming up. First up, Gaurav, Novati, a fintech business, sort of put in the buy now, pay later basket. Has that? It's done a deal with Afterpay for in New Zealand to offer its services there. What do you think of Novati?
Yeah, it has been put in that basket. I'm surprised by that, because when I look at this is a business that is probably more ambitious than just a buy now, pay later. They're actually they're trying to be a merchant acquirer, a processor of transaction, an issuer of credit cards, and also do settlement with a banking license as well. So they're trying, it's very ambitious. They're trying to do the whole gamut of the payment system. Yeah. Most firms of scale would choose one of those parts of the payment system and focus and concentrate on that. Tyro, for example, I think does merchant acquiring really well. EML does the issuance, card issuance really well. These guys are trying to do all of it. It's a $120 million market cap, very low revenue, and most of the revenue has been acquired. I think they're probably a bit more ambitious than what their capabilities so far demonstrate. The management actually looks quite good. The directors and executives have a good pedigree, a good track record. So that's the one thing that sort of keeps it in its favor. But I got to say, I don't love the strategy. It just appears to be stitching other businesses together and buying low quality revenue. It's a sell for me, but the management team is good. So it's probably one I just keep an eye on every now and again, just because there's good people involved, but it's sell for me.
Okay. Nathan, the share price has done okay as well, has it?
Yeah, well, it has recently. Probably if you held it for the last 6 to 9 months, you probably didn't. Early last year, everything in tech, fintech has had a pretty big run. So you've got to understand where we are in the fintech cycle. As Gaurav mentioned, a lot of business models concentrate on particular areas, and they've done that really well. Now the growth plays there, they've grabbed the customer base, and the whole acquisition of Afterpay by Square to become Block, go figure the naming, is based around bringing together different customer bases and putting together and cross-selling and becoming a bigger player. Now I think that's generally where we are headed for fintechs. The trick would be obviously everyone's going to at some point have to get to scale, and you've got a limited amount of quality dance players, and you've got to catch your dancing partner. So I think there's going to be a consolidation in this industry. The better guys will match up with other better guys to make a bigger machine, and that will get them going through the cycle. Now, where we are in the cycle, growth stocks are coming off because rates are going up, multiples will come off. So this is where stocks that are not making a profit for a number of years will struggle. And this is one of them. So it's going to be tough in this market. I think you need to be already at a certain scale, or you need to have an advantage in a particular area to survive through the next cycle. I don't see that in this one. I'm struggling to see that. And I think it's going to be tough because they're doing too many pieces. Okay. So we kind of, in the fintech space, as much as we weren't a fan of buy now, pay later, we jumped into Zip after the beating. And for me, with nearly 10% short in Zip, I think that's a potential takeover play. For me, that makes sense. Where we are in the cycle, still dominant player, but NOV is still too early in the stage to play that.
Okay. All right. Paige wants a view, Nathan, on NIB, the big private health insurer based in Newcastle.
Yeah, look, I'm a member. Geez, it's a tough industry. These guys are really good at managing it. Premiums, overall in the insurance sector is going up. They've done well, nothing like a pandemic to get people interested in boring healthcare insurance. So in that context, I think a lot of things have worked in their favor, good management, they've done well. But I think the market knows that and pricing that in. I don't see the excitement here. You're not gonna find a stock that people don't know about. Everyone knows it's good. Everyone knows they're doing well. Everyone knows ahead of time how they're going to play out. So there's no real surprises. So, look, if you held it and you've had a good run, I think you hold on to it. It's okay. It's a hold. But if I'm putting, if I'm trying to pick the best 10, 15 stocks, this doesn't stack up.
Okay. Nathan, what do you think of private health insurance? Is tough because basically government has so many restrictions on it. But we seem to be healthier. We're dying less at the moment. There've been... was I reading over summer that car fatalities are the lowest in 100 years? And I read this morning that since the pandemic, life expectancy, almost a year has been added to a person's life from the pandemic.
Isn't that extraordinary? And I think the death rate is actually, fewer people have died during the pandemic. It's just so counterintuitive.
Which includes all the COVID deaths.
That's right. Yeah, we never would have picked these outcomes. Yeah, the world is a strange place. And this kind of fits into that theme because this should be a lousy business on all accounts. I mean, you were talking gross margins of 20%, pre-tax margins of 10%. These are low margins. And the way this industry works is if you court the best quality customers, so NIB has a strategy of signing up young, healthy people you don't get the full benefit of that because the industry forces, there's a shared fund called the Equalization Fund. NIB has to pay money into that fund to subsidize someone like Medibank Private, who has older customers. And so the health insurance works by young people subsidizing old people, and the regulators force companies who have more young people to pay for the older health insurers as well. So you don't actually keep the full benefit of your cohort. So, I mean, and considering all of that and the price increases and the regulated regulated caps on prices, this has been an extraordinary success story, and it's all due to magnificent management, some of the best management in the industry. But it is a very tough business, and I think it's probably appropriately priced. It's going to be hard to do well from here. Look, I think you can hold it. It'll pay a decent yield. There's a certain comfort in being invested with a wonderful management team. And I think if you're a conservative investor, you can certainly hold this and you'll probably do okay from it. But if you're looking for growth, you won't find it here. Hold.
All right. Gaurav, a bit earlier when you were talking about News Corp, you were raving about their book division. Luke wants a view on Booktopia. Is it doing as well as the News Corp book division?
Booktopia is a business that really intrigues me. I was sitting in a conference a couple of years ago, just when this business listed, and Booktopia was coming up to speak, and I just almost walked out. I thought, who wants to invest in when Amazon is your biggest competitor and you know, it's books? I was not interested. And when I heard the CEO talk, I was enthralled. I think this is a really interesting business, much better than I thought it was going to be. They do $200 million of sales at okay margins, or a 6% margin, but the CEO is actually really good here. So they've got a plan to get into the distribution business and to do publishing as well. And I think that's the key for raising margins. They're relatively competitive on the retail front, but margins are low. There's an opportunity to expand margins by doing those other activities. They also have, because they have so much local knowledge and Amazon is not local, they can actually dominate small niches. So they actually dominate the education niche where there's very high margins and low competition. And I like the way that management go about fighting a big gorilla like Amazon. I think this has been very effective. The founder has been selling down stock recently, but he still owns a big chunk. Look, it's a tough business. I'm watching this for the moment. I wouldn't be running in to buy it yet. It looks kind of interesting, I must say. It's on my watch list. I'd just be watching it. I'd call it a hold. It's starting to get interesting. It's probably a candidate for further research.
Yeah. Nathan, it's had a big drop in the share price. So is it starting to get to that interesting level?
Well, I was going to start with no need to close the book on this one, but you know, the puns are coming, so you got to use it. I think we were talking about this when they IPO'd. I mean, you cannot pick a better time than a COVID lockdown Christmas to have very good like-for-like sales, and they came out on the IPO with the great numbers. So expectations were way too high, and that's coming off. I'm really worried about what the retail sector is being expected to deliver over the next year or so. And that's what, for me, worries me about Booktopia. I think, obviously, the share price has come off. Expectations are too bloody high when they floated, and that's reaching reality. Gaurav's right. They need to evolve the model, and that may be the answer to margin expansion. The problem for me is the macro. 2021 was as good as you're going to get. That's, you know, you've got a really bad macro in the pandemic, then you get massive handouts and everyone's flushed with cash. You know, kids who were working in hospitality were getting paid more than what they were actually earning while they were working, and everyone was spending money. You just look at the retail sales, how well it went through that year. That was the best year. So a lot of the retail stocks were artificially pumped up. Don't get me started on JobKeeper. So those kind of things played into your thematic. Now the trick is, how do you follow on from there? I don't think you're going to get anything like that in a handout that plays out. I think rates go up, consumer spending, inflation bites into it. All of these things will play. So you've got to be careful. You know, you've got to look for the best of the best in that sector if you want exposure. And Booktopia, for me right now, is not there. So I want to see it prove itself. So I'd be staying out of it. If you're in it, look, it's one to keep an eye on, but if you're in it, it's one of those psychological problems for me. Do you sell it after it falls so much? You'll probably hold on, see what they do. But yeah, fresh money, no way.
Okay. All right. Let's go on to Wesfarmers now. And thank you for suggesting this, because today they also put out a trading update, Nathan. Share price is up, what, 2% on the back of that update, even though they're forecasting a decrease in half-yearly earnings. What did you make of the update and the share price?
Yeah, look, when you're in a macro environment where supply chains are really affected, even the big boys are affected, and you know, Wesfarmers are seeing that. Look, we always talk about the listed private equity players, and Wesfarmers is one of them. Management is really highly regarded. They, you know, they buy unloved assets, they turn them around. You know, they generally do really well with them, so you back them. Multiples are high. I mean, they're pretty high, so their expectations are pretty high. The beauty of Wesfarmers is they've still got a massive balance sheet with a lot of cash waiting for takeovers. I think API bid is a smart play. They wanted to get into that sector. It's hard to get into that sector. And so Wesfarmers will do really well there. And they've got in at the right time. I don't think they're paying too much for it. So that's one play. I still think they'll do other big acquisitions, and that's where the growth is going to come. I still think there's a potential they'll move into the chemical sector. I think they still might go into specialized retail. That's where I can see their expertise. They can, you know, unloved assets that they could turn around. So that's what you're buying. You're buying the optionality in the management's ability to turn around shitty businesses and come out with better performance. So that's what you buy. I think the multiple's too expensive in where we are. I think it'll come off and you'll get it cheaper. But if you held it through, it's a hold for me. But fresh money, I'm not buying it right now.
Okay. Shahana wanted a view on this, Gaurav, saying with the pullback from the high 60s, as we saw on the chart, is it time to buy for a long-term hold? Matt, the update said good results from Bunnings, Wesfarmers Chemicals, Kmart and Officeworks were a bit weaker.
Yeah, the way to think about Wesfarmers is, as Nathan says, as a big private equity firm. And when you do that, multiples become less important. Cash flow and capital allocation become more important. And look, I have to say, I think this looks kind of interesting. It's a wonderful collection of assets. I love Wesfarmers so much. You know, when you open a Wesfarmers presentation, they say on every presentation, Wesfarmers' primary objective is to provide satisfactory returns to shareholders. That is their preamble. You know, I love the modesty and the boringness of that. You know, most companies promise to solve this problem and we'll do this and do that and outstanding returns. And these guys are just promising you, you know, we're going to do satisfactory returns for you. And that's all we're going to do. And that just, that for me sums up so much of the cultural, the culture of Wesfarmers. But look, Bunnings alone generates $2 billion. It's probably worth $40 billion on a $60 billion Wesfarmers market cap. I don't think this is expensive. The other stuff is fantastic. As Nathan says, there's billions of dollars of firepower left in Wesfarmers to generate another acquisition or two. So I think there's actually more to come here. The guys running it are fantastic. I think if you're patient capital and conservative capital, you can buy this and do perfectly well for a long time. So I'm going to go buy it.
The API deal, Australian Pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, look, we actually we had a buy on API before the deal, so I'm pleased to see Wesfarmers recognize value. That's a strategic asset. It was completely misunderstood by the market, and I think there's a lot of optionality with plugging that into the Wesfarmers model. These guys, I think that's a great example of management nous and identifying assets that other people, except for us, had no recognition of the value for. So I think it's a great example of how good these guys are.
Yeah, and you've always said that this is a company like that's like a private equity portfolio, is it? Aggressive management, there for bargains in the interests of shareholders.
It's because the the asset base is flexible. You know, that's why I hesitate to value this on a multiple, because the assets can flip and change over time. So you don't want to be capitalizing today's earnings necessarily. You know, 5 years ago, this was an 80-90% retail operation, and now it's something completely different. And I think in 5 years' time, it will look different again. But what will remain the same is that you have really high returns on capital, you have really smart management hunting out for you the best places to park your money, and they get access to deals that we don't get access to. I think this is a really good spot for as I said, conservative, patient capital. I'd certainly be holding and buying this fund.
For yourself, managed super fund.
And the other, that's right.
Remember, Koshy, is that right now where we are in the cycle, the standard retail stocks will struggle, but the more staple type retail stocks will do a lot better. So as Gaurav mentioned, a number of pieces, a lot of what Wesfarmers do is not your standard retail. Mm. You know, Kmart is your default cheap retail. Bunnings is your default hardware. So Officeworks is your default purchase place. So it's a lot of that is by default becomes a staple play. So they're building up, a basket of businesses that are more staple. And I think over the next 2 to 3 years, the staples will do better than your discretionary retail shops. So I think this is positioned well. I just think in the where we are in the growth value cycle, these guys will come off a bit. But you're right. This is a, you know, if you're a listed private equity, you buy these things in the pullback.
Yep. All right, Nathan. Our final stock. Katie wants a view on Global Data Center Group. Sort of data centers for a couple of years has been sexy. This is basically an investment fund investing in data centers, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm waiting for a PhD from Gaurav on this one. He loves his data centers. It's almost like a tech porn for Gaurav. When you're looking at these kind of place, you got to trust management. You got to look at who are the guys in the stock. What do they see? Have a look at the major shareholders. There's a lot of smart fundies in there, and they've been there for a while. So this is a long term play, and I think the data centers thematic is not something like it's not going to be diluted by something else. I think the data center structure will be there. It'll probably get consolidated over time. There'll be bigger players coming in, and your demand will keep rising and rising as we do more. We're in the we're going into the data age, from the industrialization age to the data age, and there's going to be so much more data that's going to come in, and there's going to be so much demand for data centers. There's going to be more and more built. So in that context, I think it's in a great place. There's a lot of fundies backing the management. And I think that just tells you how well the market thinks of this management. I'd be backing them. I'd put the money in. I don't really care about the price. It's just a long-term play. You buy it and you forget about it.
Okay. Gaurav, Global Data Center Group, is it a better option than sort of investing directly into, a NextDC to take that portfolio approach?
Yeah, I was interested in this because, as Nathan said, it is backed by good management. I think it's David Tooley who's done this. He's been involved in the industry for a while. It's backed by good capital, good management. But when I look at the asset quality here, it's pretty poor, really. They only have 2.4 megawatts of capacity. And I know that doesn't mean much to people watching, but for context, NextDC will do about 90, and they have a plan to get to 300 megawatts. Mac Telecom does about 50 with a plan to get to 80. Infratel, which owns half of CDC, which is the biggest DC center in Australia, they'll get to 400. So 2.4 is minuscule. It's almost uncompetitive. And that's actually across a whole series of data centers. That's not even in one data center. The DC they own in Guam is 1 megamore. I mean, that's nothing.
Yeah.
Across Europe and South America, they have 1.6. And because these are so small, the way you make money from DCs is it's just a big cold room. If all you're doing is building a big cold room and collecting rent, your rent's going to fall, your margins are going to be slim, it's going to be a competitive business. The reason NextDC, Mac and IFT do well is because they provide opportunities to stitch servers and companies together inside the data center. So the data center becomes an opportunity for networking, and it's those network profits that drive returns. Once you establish a network inside the DC, you can't pull yourself out, you suddenly get pricing power. You get 80, 90% gross margins. And then you can add services, which Mac is doing at the moment. You can add services on top of that. That's the way to make money. Just building a cold room at 1-2 megawatts, that's a crappy business. And these guys can't even decide. I mean, that they own a bit of a hyperscale center. They own a bit of an edge center. They own a transit center. Like, there's no coherent strategy here. They're just kind of buying whatever they can buy. And that's because the industry is already stitched up by the big guys. And it doesn't include GDC. The most interesting part of this company is actually they own a stake of AirTrunk, which is on its way to having 200 or 300 megawatts. It's a big, high quality business. They own a chunk of that. It's only $30 or $40 million, so not a big deal, but that's the only interesting part. Otherwise, okay. I think this is nowhere near as good as the legacy guys of the ASX. And we've recommended and owned all of them for a long, long time. So that's NEXTDC, Macquarie Telecom, and Infratel. All better options than this. Sell GDC.
Okay. All right. Gaurav Sodhi from Intelligent Investor. Thank you, sir. Good to catch up. Enjoy the rest of the week. Nathan Somasundaram from Deep Data Analytics. Likewise, always great. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys. Great to be back.
It is. Yep. Too right. It's great to have them back as well. Let's just summarize our last five stocks. Novati is a sell from Gaurav, a no from Nathan. A hold from both of them on NIB, the private health insurance group. Booktopia, a no from Nathan, a hold from Gaurav. Wesfarmers, a hold from Nathan, a buy from Gaurav. And Global Data Centres was a yes from Nathan and a no from Gaurav, who prefers going into Macquarie Telecommunications and NEXTDC and Infratel as the options. That's it for us to kick off this Monday. Great to be back on the call, of course. We're here every weekday between midday and 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you want to send us any stocks to put before our panel, email them thecall@ausbiz.com.au.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.